Welcome to episode 87 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. On May the 12th, 2007, I visited the Yachiho Highland Plateau in the Nagano Prefecture. And today we're going to take a look at a few photos from the trip. I was hoping for something different from what I ended up with, but late snows in April stopped a certain type of flowering tree from flowering as of now. I'll maybe go back in a week or so, but as it's a 3.5 hour to 4 hour drive, I'm not sure at the moment. Anyway, let's get right into the main topic and I'll fill you in on the details. I arrived in the Yachiho area about 8 a.m, having got up at 4 a.m. After just 3 hours sleep. Needless to say, I was pretty tired, so after doing a little bit of reconnaissance and finding out where everything was, and doing a little bit of shooting of some white birch trees that didn't turn out that great, I decided to catch an hour or so sleep in the car before I started shooting. I pulled off into the car park after having a sleep, I pulled off into the car park at the Yachiho Shizen-en, which roughly translates as the nature or natural garden. That was about 10 a.m. And to be honest, at this point, my plan was to spend around, I don't know, maybe 30 minutes to an hour looking around the garden and then move on. This is why I decided to take the little bottle of sunblock from my pocket and leave it in the trunk of my car, and the reason why I decided to leave the bottle of water in the car as well. And I really didn't intend to spend that much time in there. Anyway, I paid my 200 yen, which is about $2, entrance fee, and I grabbed my a copy of the map from the counter there, and I walked through the door into the garden. And I'll put a link to the page, it's a Japanese page that has a copy of the map, into the show notes so that you can see, you get a general idea of how the land lies, but it is Japanese. I couldn't find an English translation, a translated version, but you know, if you're interested, you can sort of see what the place looks like a little bit. It turned out though that in just 28 hectares, which is, I believe, around 280,000 square meters, there's really quite a lot to see. They have a beautiful sort of mountain stream with a waterfall that, and woods all around it with white birch and Japanese beech trees, not to mention loads of wild flowers, although many of them weren't flowering at the moment because of the late snows, as I said. The flowers were, the ones that were out were either pretty tired or they'd been beaten down by that late snow. Or the shoots probably got some snow damage and pretty much ruined them. But it was still really nice. You know, the birch woods and the beech trees were pretty spectacular. And I saw a number of places where the trees were just really a picture, you know, literally. And the problem was that although they're calling this place a garden, it's generally untouched. It's not really a garden at all. It's just a piece of wilderness that someone owns and have sort of fenced off to allow you to walk around in. And it's very natural. But each time I found a particular spot that would have made a perfect photo, there was these like hand-cut, human-cut logs of the white birch trees sort of lying around there on the ground, and it totally just spoiled the shot. So, you know, there was a beautiful blue sky with some wispy white clouds, sort of like a watercolour painting. It was just perfect, but it was a real shame that I couldn't get these shots because of the logs that were lying around, sort of putting a total human look on the whole thing. So I know that I could have photoshopped these out. Please don't sort of email me saying, why don't you just take the shot and email and Photoshop them out, but you know, I really don't like to go that far with my retouching of images, and not to mention the time spent to do this. I don't like to spend that much time on post-processing of each individual image either. Anyway, there was so much else to see as I walked through the area, which really is, apart from the cut logs, a total wilderness. I find myself totally unable to just rush through. To cut a long story short, I ended up spending 5 hours in there. So by the time I got back to the car, I was pretty badly sunburned and incredibly thirsty. I wish I had had a drink out of the river or the stream as well while I was still at the waterfall before I sort of, you know, walked around the rest of the area. But it just didn't really occur to me that I was going to be in there that long. So a few mistakes kind of put me through my paces a little bit towards the end of the day. It was great to just sort of spend my time wistfully wandering around through the woods and along the stream and, you know, shooting away as much as I wanted. I should have been better prepared, but, you know, I always try to sort of take a long time shooting. So I'm really not sure why I was so easy about sort of dropping the suntan or the sunblock in the car and didn't take any liquids. So silly me. I think, though, I just really expected that there wasn't going to be that much to shoot in there. So I was, you know, it was just a mistake. I think part of the problem was probably because they called it a garden and I just didn't expect it to be as it was. But anyway, the next time I came out of there, you know, I was hungry and I went for something to eat next in the cafe in the next building along from the entrance and then headed back to Tokyo in time to get home for an evening meal with the other half. So anyway, let's start to look through the shots that I got during my five-hour adventure. First, let's look at image number 1427. If you're a new listener, remember that there are many ways to listen and learn from this podcast. If you are wondering why I give numbers for each image, then search out episode 0, which I released, I think, in around November last year. This explains what the podcast is all about and how to view images and make the most of it. Also, remember that I release the same audio track as both an MP3 and an enhanced podcast, M4A extension, with chapters so that I can change the images as we progress. There is a separate feed for each file type, and you can get a link to these from the podcast's page at martinbaileyphotography.com or subscribe in iTunes. They're both listed. If you are listening in iTunes, though, I suggest you go for the enhanced version because it's just much easier to follow. Anyway, let's go back to image 1427, which you can obviously see is a shot with the low perspective assignment in mind. If you want more information about the assignment, by the way, listen to episode 85. I was lucky for this shot in that the tree and the ground foliage is actually on a small embankment next to the footpath as I walked down towards the stream flowing through the woods. This actually allowed me to get an incredibly low angle, looking as Landon, that's BK Secret in the on my website, had commented. It looks as though I'm almost underground. It's very, very low angle, and I don't usually talk about shots that I'm shooting with the assignment in mind until the assignment is over. But I probably wouldn't come back to this later, so I'll discuss it now. And remember, too, that I suggest that even if you should happen to like any of my shots, please don't vote for me in the assignments. Give your vote to someone who has a chance of winning one of my prints or the yearly grand prize, which I'm not eligible for. So anyway, things to note about this shot are that I purposefully placed the tree trunk along the right side of the frame as opposed to the bottom. Of course, the tree isn't growing out of the side of the frame there, but in putting it that way, it really sort of allowed me to align the green leaves, the base that are at the base of the shot. I put them across the base there. To really help me emphasize how low the perspective is. You'll see if you look at the EXIF data that I shot this with a 16mm focal length, and again, that's really helped to sort of accentuate the low perspective, and I used an aperture of f16 with a shutter speed of 1/30th of a second and ISO 100. I was shooting handheld, crouched down against the side of the embankment. I wanted to really just touch on the hyperfocal distance with these settings in mind, and more importantly, why I didn't use the hyperfocal distance. So For a focal length of 16 millimeters at f/16, the hyperfocal distance is 55 centimeters. And now this means that if I was to simply preset my lens to 55 centimeters or 22 inches, I would have gotten everything from 29 centimeters or 11 inches to infinity in focus. So that's a really wide depth of field. The nearest leaves in this shot, though, were probably at around 40 centimeters or so. I don't recall exactly, obviously, I didn't measure it. But around 40 centimeters, which is about 16 inches. So the hyperfocal distance would have been fine. However, I chose to actually focus on the nearest leaf there, the largest leaf across the bottom, which is, as I say, around 40 centimeters away, which actually gives me a near focus of 23 centimeters. And a far focus of 141 centimeters. So that's about 9 inches to 56 inches depth of field. And you're probably wondering why I would do that when I could have just had everything in nice crisp focus. Well, you know, the rest of the shot after the 141 centimeters or the 56 inch mark is in relatively sharp focus, but it's still a little bit soft because of the fact that I chose to focus on the leaf. And I have to admit, I took a few of the shots, some at the hyperfocal distance as well for comparison, and just to see, you know, how they came out. But came back to the one that we see here because the softer distant elements also really enhance the sort of feel, the scale of, you know, being sort of so low down to the ground. It's nice to see everything in sharp focus sometimes, but the human eye really doesn't work that way either. So, you know, I just use this to emphasize the fact that, you know, the tree is so huge and the grasses there all looking like they're really sort of close to us, but then giving the rest of it a slightly softer look just all really helps. So anyway, moving on to the next shot, let's take a look at image number 1428. Just behind me as I shot the last image was a stream with a really nice little waterfall. And I shot the waterfall too, but the surroundings were really quite drab as the spring colour with the fresh green leaves, part of one of the reasons that I was here today, were not really blessing us with their presence yet. Because of that, I decided not to upload any shots of these falls, but what we see in image 1428 is a close-up shot. I made it with the 70-200mm f2.8 lens at about 185mm. The first thing that caught my eye here was the wonderful camouflage effect caused by the colour of the growth on the rock. As I viewed the LCD though to see how, you know, the images were turning out, and I zoomed in a little bit to check the details, I noticed these little white squiggly lines on the surface of the water looking a lot like graffiti. And what was happening was that the sun was reflecting on the water, and I reckon that as the water moves slightly, the reflection of the sun gets sort of jiggled around a little bit during the eighth of a second exposure, and it's kind of registering as these squiggly lines that aren't easily recognizable with the naked eye. I shot about 10, maybe 15 images of this same place, or, you know, while it was set up on the tripod, as the water moved along, and just to see if I could improve on the effect. And this is the one that I chose. You might not be able to see the details if you're viewing on an iPod. So if you're interested, I really do suggest that you check this one out on iTunes or on my website when you get a chance. It's really quite a cool effect. I was shooting with an aperture of f/16, by the way, to get this slightly long shutter speed to sort of, you know, get the flowing water effect, but also to make sure that I got as much of the rock face in focus as possible, as it was quite close to me, meaning that the depth of field was going to be getting a little bit on the shallow side. As I walked up from the stream and the waterfall, I noticed what I captured in image number 1429. It was the light that fell on these Japanese beech tree trunks with a visiting sort of fresh leaf or two there, and the pattern on the bark of the beech trees that, you know, really just caught my eye. I decided to capture this with a wide aperture of f3.2, which gave a shutter speed of 1/1000th of a second at ISO 100. This forced the majority of the background to be really nicely blurred, but as I was a few meters from the foreground tree, we can still see enough detail in the other tree trunks to engage us, and we can also see some patterns made by the leaves. Again, I experimented here, taking a few other shots at slightly different compositions and with f5.6 and f8 aperture. But whenever I do this, I pretty much always come back to the widest aperture with loads of bokeh. This really is what attracts me. I'll probably continue to shoot the other images, but I must say, if I was shooting film, I probably wouldn't do this. I continued to walk around through the woods. I think that I'm going to just continue to call these woods rather than a garden, because the word garden really doesn't do justice to this place and the wild effect that it has. But anyway, I was walking up from the brook, and I recall these images in my mind that I mentioned earlier of these white birch trees that are, really just, they're haunting me, literally. The cut logs just kept coming back. They were there every time I sort of saw a really nice shot, and I really regret not being able to do anything about that. I had taken a map from the counter where I paid my entrance fee, and it had three tracks through the woods mapped out. One of the tracks was really short, and then there was a medium length one, and then the longest one was still only 2.5 kilometers, which is probably about a mile and a half. So, when you consider that I was in there for 5 hours, you can probably tell that I was really taking my time and enjoying the warm spring weather. And there was something else that we'll get to shortly that kept me in the same spot for a couple of hours as well. As I started to go downhill again, back towards the stream, I noticed a few little purple flowers, which we can see in image number 1430. These tiny little guys are probably around 2 inches, 5 centimeters high, maybe a tad more, which you can probably tell from the scale given by the grass that I used to frame these guys. I used a small reflector to bounce some light back into the front of the flowers, as there was some really quite harsh shadows in their centres. I used a wide aperture of f4 and you can basically see that I was conscious to place the other flowers in the background between the two main ones on the left and the grass to the right. These are small details, but paying attention to your bokeh or the little blotches of colour that you get in the background can really help to keep your compositions well ordered. As I reached the brook again, or the stream, as I made my way around the trail, I could hear some birds calling, and you might be surprised to hear that although, until now I've been talking about shooting macros and wide angles and some close-ups with my 70-200mm, I actually had my 600mm f4 on my back, which, it's always difficult to decide what to take with me when I'm out and about. But when I'm going to be in wilderness like this, you never know when you're going to come across some birds, and I really don't like to waste a chance to shoot our feathered friends. The footpath takes you over a wooden bridge across the stream, which was wide enough for people, maybe three people walking side by side. So there was going to be plenty of room for people to still get by, even if I stood my 600mm on the tripod to shoot the birds for a while. I would have thought about this a little more had it been crowded. So if I was going to be getting in the way, people sort of having to wait as they were crossing in both directions, I would have thought about this. But I'd seen about four, maybe five people in the area during the whole day. So I thought that I'd just set up and see what I could shoot. I have another image which is haunting me from this day, seriously haunting me, because as I was setting up here, literally just moments after I'd decided to try to shoot from here, a Narcissus flycatcher, which is a beautifully coloured little bird, stopped on a branch about maybe 3 to 4 meters from me, but I wasn't ready. I'd just about leveled the tripod, and I had dropped the 600mm lens on there and mounted the camera to it, and I hadn't set the exposure and the switch on the side of the lens that tells it how close to focus. To speed up the focus on this behemoth of a lens, you have some settings, and one of them is to not focus on anything. I think it's about anything nearer than 16 meters or so. And that was the setting that the lens was on from my last trip. So, you know, basically during that time, I think it was when I was, it might have been when I was shooting the red crown cranes in Hokkaido. But, you know, while shooting these birds flying in the sky, they were all more than 16 meters away. So I think I'd basically, you know, the setting was left there. But as I quickly panicked and sort of tried to grab a shot of this this flycatcher, it wouldn't focus. As I said, I hadn't set the exposure or anything as well, but I was going to try and get a shot anyway. But then, you know, realized everything was still set up the wrong way around, and I flicked the switch so that I could, focus much closer, and I started to check the exposure settings, and I'm really talking about 5 seconds or so here, and the flycatcher flew away. And so it was as if he knew that I'd just set him up, and I wasn't ready, and he just came down to tease me. So anyway, the other bird that was still flying around quite a lot was a grey wagtail. They were really quite a distance from me, much further away than the flycatcher had just presented itself to me. But as you know, we can see in image 1432 that they still were pretty small in the frame. You're probably going to have a real hard time seeing any detail in this again if you're looking on an iPod, so I really do suggest that you take a look either in iTunes or on my website later. Now, you're probably wondering, though, if you can see the details, why this bird is called a grey wagtail when it has such a striking yellow belly. Without turning this into a bird-watching podcast, let me just tell you that there is another bird exactly called that, a yellow wagtail. But the yellow wagtail is literally yellow from its chin right down to under its tail. And the grey wagtail has black under its chin and a slightly paler sort of band across its belly, as does the one in the photograph. There is another shot of this bird uploaded too, but I'm not going to talk about it today. In fact, I was even in two minds as to whether to upload these shots at all, because I went somewhere else last weekend and got some amazing shots of these birds from a different area of Japan, including some shots of them feeding their chicks, but we'll take a closer look at those next week. Back to the current image, though. I was shooting with the 600mm f4, as I said, but I had the 1.4x extender attached too, so I was actually shooting with a focal length of 840mm. Even then, though, it's really difficult to get a close-up of these guys with them being so far away, and being so small, of course. They were, they were down, right down, way down the river, the stream, and it really just wasn't possible for me to sort of walk down the banks to get any closer. I switched the ISO to 400 so that I could get a fast enough shutter speed to freeze the movement of the birds, as these little guys can really tend to flit around quite a lot. But also, when shooting at 840mm, camera shake can be a real problem, even with image stabilizer turned on. So this was giving me a shutter speed of 1/400th of a second at f5.6, which is the widest aperture for this lens with the 1.4 extender fitted. And 1/400th of a second is really about the minimum that I like to try to go when shooting at this focal length. The flycatcher was still haunting me, though, and I was really hoping that he'd come back. And I decided to hang around at this point for a while, as I really wanted to give myself another chance or two. And after about 30 minutes or so, the flycatcher did come back, and he sat on the same branch. The problem was this time that he was, where he sat, placed a twig right between me and him, and I you know, I quickly picked up the camera on the tripod, moved back a little to get a clean shot, and again he was gone. You know, I'm talking literally 5 seconds or so of opportunity, and I missed it again. So I'm really kicking myself at this point. I remember feeling incredibly clumsy and sort of disappointed at missing two chances, you know, to photograph what is probably the second most beautiful bird that I've seen with my own eyes here in Japan. And the most beautiful bird, of course, is the red-crowned crane in Hokkaido, but that's just my opinion. Anyway, I stuck with it. If this guy had come back twice, you know, he was here twice in 30 minutes or so, then he'd be back. And I think I'd actually, I'd shot the grey wagtails, maybe the ones that we just looked at, not long before this, but, you know, I'd been here by this time almost 2 hours, and the sun was really starting to burn me when the flycatcher did come back. And it was much further away this time, you know, nowhere near as close as it had been for the first two opportunities. But I got one or two sort of really nice sharp shots, and then, you know, one of them, you know, let's look at one of the first shots, which is 1433. I have actually had to crop around a third of the shot, you know, maybe 20% or so on the top and the left-hand side, I think it was, just sort of leaving the center two-thirds just to get the flycatcher this large in the frame. But again, as a shot of a bird in its habitat, you know, I really quite like it. We can see his beautiful markings with the bright yellow belly, like the wagtail, but then the flycatcher has a bright orange chin and, you know, that sort of yellow-orange line above the eyes, you know, really just makes it such a beautiful bird to look at. And I know that there are more colourful birds in Japan, but as far as the ones that I've actually seen with my own eyes, this is probably the most colourful. Again, shot at 1/400th of a second at 840mm, but this time I'd lowered the ISO to 320. The aperture was still wide open at f5.6 as well. As you know now, though, this guy doesn't hang around anywhere for very long, and I was really pleased to catch the moment that he took to the wing, and that we can see in image number 1434, shot just 6 seconds after the last. Of course, shot with exactly the same settings, and, you know, I wasn't going to start messing around with the settings while I've got this guy in my sights, but I'm relatively happy with this shot. Unfortunately, as the depth of field is so shallow at this focal length, even at this distance, as the flycatcher flew towards me, he came just slightly out of the depth of field and is therefore just a little on the soft side. This was probably also caused by the movement, even at 1/400th of a second. Anyway, I did a little bit of selective sharpening in Photoshop, and I think I've just about salvaged a beautiful image here. I'm going to print it out nice and large over the weekend, though, to see if this shot really does stand the test of a good photograph. So with that, let's wrap things up for today. I have a real treat for you in store next week with another trip report style episode of the last weekend that I mentioned earlier, when I visited a beautiful waterfall in the Fukushima prefecture about 3 hours north of Tokyo. And once again, I had my 600mm f4 with me. So when I noticed that two grey wagtails were constantly going back to the same place on a rock face, I figured that there had to be some nesting chicks there. So again, they were a long way off, but I managed to get some really nice shots of them, and as they were sort of, you know, going around the area catching flies and things to feed the chicks. So look forward to that if you're interested. If you're not, don't. And for now, though, let's just enjoy our week. And if you haven't gotten your low perspective shot for the assignment yet, bear it in mind while you're out shooting, if you get a chance to go out, that is. Whatever you do, though, have a great time doing it. Bye-bye.
PhotoCastNetwork.com, your photography resource in the podosphere. PhotoCastNetwork.com.